Hearing is subdivision 2018-10, Overbrook Meadows, Overbrook Acres LLC.
This is a cluster environmentally sensitive developing district overlay zone subdivision to divide 64.2 acres into 135 single-family lots to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Broadkill 100, Sussex County. The property is lying on the northeast side of Coastal Highway Route 1 across from Cave Neck Road. The tax parcel is District 235, Map 23, Parcel 1. The zoning district is AR1 Agricultural Residential District. Staff would submit for the record an exhibit booklet, a subdivision plan, the environmental assessment and public facilities report, comments from the Sussex Conservation District, the Sussex County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division, the Sussex County Public Works Division, DLDOT, DENREC, Divisions of Waste and Hazardous Substances and Groundwater Discharge, comments from the Division of Air Quality. We also received comments from Public Health, the Fire Marshal, Delaware Electric Co-op. We also received comments from the Sussex County Mapping and Addressing Department. We also have the response to the plus letter, and we have one letter in opposition, and that would be from James LaBella, that he would ask the commission not to approve the request to build Overbrook Meadows when the Overbrook Mall proposal was defeated. One of the reasons was that the tract of land abuts tidal wetlands, and over 70% of that tract was labeled as a major recharge area for the aquifer. The county has already has major issues with the clean water, and to take away a recharge area does not serve the people well. And he would ask the commission to review all the reasons for denial of the mall project. Since many apply to this proposal, the tract of land needs to remain farmland, not another unneeded housing development. And there's concern about there's already too much development. And that is all he had to say. Thank you.
Okay, we thank you. Mr. Fuquay.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Jim Fuquay. I am an attorney, and I am representing the applicant, Overbrook Real Estate Partners, LLC. With me are Lou DiBitanto on behalf of the applicant, Steve Gorski from Duffield Associates, and Joe Caligero from the traffic group. As Janelle stated, there was an exhibit book submitted for the record, which included the environmental assessment and public facilities evaluation report, the Section 999C report, and the plus response letter, and other relevant documents. As stated, this is an application for an environmentally sensitive development area cluster subdivision. The subdivision will be comprised of 135 single-family lots and recreational amenities on 64 acres of land. The 64 acres are the rear portion of a 114-acre parcel that's located on the northeast side of Route 1. And that parcel is located across Route 1 from the Route 1 Cave Neck Road intersection and approximately 1.5 miles north of the Nassau Bridge. I have been looking forward to making a presentation to you that I could keep very concise and short, not go into a lot of background and history. Unfortunately, tonight's not going to be the night I'm going to have an opportunity to do that. If there's ever been an application that has some background in history, it's this application. This entire 114-acre parcel was the subject of a prior application, and that application was seeking CR1 commercial zoning for large-scale commercial use, which was proposed to be an 850,000-square-foot shopping center. And that application was filed in December of 2014. The Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on April 23rd, 2015. The only members of the commission and staff who witnessed that hearing, who are here tonight, are Mr. Wheatley and Vince and Janelle. And Janelle, I think, had only been working for the county for about 2 months at that time. That hearing was somewhat of a barn burner. It was the only hearing, public hearing scheduled that night, and it actually went to about 11 o'clock. So it was interesting. There was substantial evidence and legal authority presented both in favor and in opposition to that rezoning. Then on June 2nd, 2015, the County Council held its public hearing, And that hearing lasted even longer than the public or the Planning Commission hearing. On June 11th, after the County Council hearing, the Planning and Zoning Commission, by a vote of 3 in favor and 2 opposed, recommended approval of the commercial rezoning. After that, on April 12, 2016, 10 months later, after the County Council public hearing, the Council voted to deny the application by 4-1 vote. On June 8th of 2016, the applicant, in effect, filed an appeal of that decision to the Court of Chancery, alleging that the basis and reasoning of the Council's decision was not in accordance with Delaware law, sought a new hearing. After that was briefed, an oral argument before the Court of Chancery, the Court actually ordered that the County Council hold a new public hearing on that application. The Planning Commission actually dodged a bullet there because it didn't require the Planning Commission to hold a new public hearing, only the County Council. The new County Council hearing was scheduled for a public hearing in February. There was an error in the advertising, so it had to be rescheduled. It was finally held on April 10th of this year, and it was just as long and just as disputed as the prior two hearings. And then on May 1st of this year, the County Council voted 3-2 to deny that rezoning application. Now, during that process, the applicant had proposed to reduce the commercial use to the front 50 acres of that site and to develop the back 64 acres as a cluster subdivision, and that's actually the application before you tonight. So basically, that process of that commercial rezoning lasted almost 4 years. It was about 3 years and 8 months. This final vote was not appealed, so that decision is final. And I will mention that despite strong disagreement and conflicting opinion between the parties, all of the parties who fought that zoning battle did it in a well-prepared, professional, and civil manner. It was handled very professionally. In summary, the applicant lost. The applicant accepted that decision and revised its plans. And the plans now are to develop two separate residential cluster subdivisions on the 114-acre parcel. Subdivision 1 of that plan is before you tonight, and Subdivision 2 will be before you later this year. As to the application itself, as you can see on the screen, the entire 116-acre parcel is basically cleared farmland with approximately 6 acres of upland woodland in that one little corner there. The land is owned by Mr. and Mrs. Fred Chappell. Mr. Chappell was born and raised in Sussex County. His grandfather and father had owned a farm south of Route 9. They purchased this property in about 1950 to expand the family's farming operations. The land has been owned by the family for about 68 years. Mr. Chappell had witnessed the area change significantly over that time with residential development and commercial uses. He decided it was time to sell, and the property is under contract to the applicant. As you can see, the property borders Route 1 on the west. It has approximately 1,800 feet of road frontage. On the north, the east, and the south, the site borders lands in agricultural use. Across Route 1 from the site is the Cave Neck Road Route 1 intersection. North of the intersection on the west side of Route 1 is the Fox Run subdivision, and then there's several parcels zoned C1 used as an auto repair business and a self-storage facility. And there's a farm market right on the corner of Cave Neck Road and Route 1. And then south of the intersection is a 4.7-acre parcel of land zoned B1, which is currently undeveloped. Further south are a number of parcels zoned C1 and numerous business and service uses. And to the rear of those parcels is the Painter's Mill MRRPC, which was approved for 300 residential units, up to half of which could be multifamily units. So in summary, the nature of the area is a mixture of farmland, residential developments, and commercial and service activities fronting on Route 1. The land is zoned AR1. No change of zone is proposed. One of the stated purposes of the AR1 zoning district is low-density single-family development, and the AR district permits detached single-family dwellings on individual lots. Under the comprehensive plan, the site is located in the environmentally sensitive developing area. As you know, that is one of the growth areas designated by the comprehensive plan. The plan states that in the environmentally sensitive development area, smaller lots and flexibility in dimensional standards should be allowed if the developer uses a cluster option that preserves open space. And that policy was actually codified as part of the Sussex County Zoning Ordinance in section 115.194.3, which provides that for subdivisions using central water and sewer, the maximum density shall be the allowable density of the underlying zoning district. So what that means is for our proposal, the land is zoned AR1, which permits 2.18 lots per acre. And that section also provides that clustering of single-family detached lots to a minimum of 7,500 square feet is permitted. So that is a permitted use. So our proposal of 135 lots on a 64.2-acre parcel with a minimum lot size of 7,500 square feet is a density of 2.10 lots per acre and conforms with the density permitted in the environmentally sensitive development area cluster. The development will be served central public water for domestic use and fire protection by Tidewater Utilities, Inc., who holds a certificate of public convenience and necessity to serve the site. They have issued an ability to serve letter to the applicant, and there is an existing 12-inch water main located in the east shoulder of Route 1, which will be the connection point for the site. The development will be served central sewer by Artesian Wastewater Management. They have existing wastewater service in the area. Artesian has indicated that it is willing and able to provide wastewater services, and that existing wastewater transmission, treatment, and disposal facilities are available and have capacity to serve the development. And electricity will be provided by Delaware Electric Co-op, who has indicated that it has adequate facilities and capacity to serve the site. Now, part of the commercial rezoning application involved a lot of testimony, information about DelDOT and traffic impact, et cetera. So as to DelDOT, as part of that prior commercial rezoning request, there were extensive discussions that took place with DelDOT and the applicant, and a traffic impact study was required and was prepared by the Traffic Group, Inc., and that TIS studied 12 intersections in the area, again, based on the proposed commercial use. The most important point, as far as DelDOT was concerned, was that since this 114-acre parcel is adjacent to Route 1, it's subject to DelDOT's Corridor Capacity Preservation Program. Now, that's an existing program that DelDOT's had for some time. The primary goal of that program is to maintain road capacity by minimizing the number of direct high-volume driveway access points along certain major roadways. So because of the corridor program, DelDOT has indicated that it would limit access to this site to uses that would generate 200 vehicle trips per day or less. And that is a very, very, very low number of traffic trips. So basically, DelDOT is saying you can't use this until some improvements are done. DelDOT did indicate that if the necessary road improvements were done, then vehicle trips could be increased. Now, as I said, at this particular location, the required roadway improvement is actually construction of a grade-separated interchange at the Route 1 Cave Neck Road intersection. And I know you're familiar with DelDOT's Route 1 grade-separated intersection program. Anybody that drives up Route 1 has seen from south of Dover down through Milford. There's been many of these grade-separated improvements done. And there's several currently under construction. This Route 1 Cave Neck Road grade separated interchange has been planned by DelDOT as part of that program, and it's actually been on the books for some time. And the Sussex County Council's current capital transportation program request to DLDOT designates the Route 1 Cape Neck Road grade separated intersection as a needed project, mainly to improve safety and to increase traffic capacity. When we did the commercial application, DLDOT's corridor capacity preservation program manager indicated that he had no objection to the commercial zoning request for the large-scale shopping center if the grade separated interchange was constructed. So basically, because of DLDOT's low limit of no more than 200 vehicle trips per day without this road improvement, that requirement that would have applied to the commercial zoning applies equally to the proposal we're making for the subdivision. So DLDOT still says this has to be built before you can do these, or at least build this. And just to put that in context, the same improvement is due. The evening peak hour for that proposed commercial use traffic was 2,527 vehicle trips. The evening peak hour estimate for this subdivision is 139 vehicle trips, but the same improvement has to be done, and that's because of the capacity or the corridor program. So in summary, DLDOT has indicated that there's three courses of action regarding this. One, DLDOT will build that grade separated interchange, but there's no timetable for when that's going to be built. The applicant is free to build it per DLDOT standards and per DLDOT review and approval, or the applicant and DLDOT could pursue approval of a public-private partnership to build the interchange, and the terms of that would have to be determined. That's happened on other situations in the state, and basically it would be a question of the applicant paying a fair share of what they're causing, as well as, in effect, fronting some money to get the project built as an earlier project rather than a later project. As I said, that all those terms would have to be negotiated. The applicant is pursuing the public-private partnership option. It has requested a meeting with Secretary Cohen of of DLDOT to begin discussions regarding the partnership. So after all that, as a condition of approval for the subdivision, like every other subdivision that you have approved, the applicant will be responsible for all entrance, intersection, roadway improvements required by DLDOT. And one of those is going to be some way to have this intersection built. So that would be a condition of approval. As far as the site, a wetland delineation was performed by Environmental Resources, Inc. That did determine that there were no state title wetlands or federal non-tidal wetlands existing on the site. In addition, none of the site is located in a 100-year floodplain as designated on the FEMA flood insurance maps. Stormwater management facilities will be designed and constructed in accordance with current DENREC regulations and will be, of course, subject to review and approval by the Sussex Conservation District. The facilities will utilize stormwater best management practices. Quality control and groundwater recharge will be provided by way of landscaped bioretention areas and bioswales throughout the site, and possibly wet ponds at appropriate locations. Flood control will be provided by capturing stormwater in the storage facilities and infiltrating it into the ground, or releasing it slowly through the stormwater facilities. Downstream receiving streams and properties will not be adversely affected. The entire site is now used for farming with no stormwater management other than natural infiltration and runoff. A total maximum daily load, TMDL, calculation was performed in accordance with DENREC's assessment protocol. That calculation found that as compared to existing conditions, the subdivision's facilities would reduce total nitrogen load by 44% and total phosphorus load by 47%. The development stormwater facilities will improve on-site groundwater recharge. The estimated impervious cover of the development is approximately 28%, which is less than the threshold requirements of the source water protection ordinance of the county. The land has been cleared agricultural land for decades. There are no known historic or cultural resources located on the site. nor any threatened or endangered species associated with the property. The site is in the Cape Henlopen School District, and fire protection service is provided by the Lewis Fire Department. The department's station number 2 is located on Route 1, approximately a mile and a half south of the site. As to the design of the subdivision, again, the portion to the front is the what I refer to as subdivision number 2, which you will be reviewing later this year. The development will contain 135 single-family lots. The minimum lot size is 8,000 square feet. The average lot size is approximately 9,000 square feet. The development is planned in 2 phases of approximately equal size. As I previously stated, the overall density of 135 lots on 64.2 acres is 2.1 lots per acre, which is permitted in the environmentally sensitive development area on AR-zoned land for a cluster development. There will be a recreational amenity area. It will include open space surrounding a clubhouse, outdoor pool, and large deck area. The specific design of this has not been completed yet. That really will involve a builder coming in and the builder deciding exactly what amenities they want to have there. But the clubhouse will be a minimum of 2,400 square feet, and the pool will be a minimum of 1,500 square feet. There'll also be a separate area of open space with a pavilion, and that's located toward the top of the property there. And there'll be other smaller gathering areas throughout the development. As I said, these are the minimums. The ultimate builder may choose to add additional features. It's proposed that the recreational amenities would be completed prior to the issuance of the 70th certificate of occupancy. The community streets, at a minimum, will be built to county street design standards and will be private. It's possible, again, depending on the builder, that the streets will be built to DelDOT standards, in which case they could either remain private or be dedicated to DelDOT. The streets will have curbs and gutters and sidewalks on both sides. Along the northern portion of the property, there will be the required 20-foot landscape buffer. That is the land of Mr. Vincent, and that land is in a farm or an agricultural preservation district. Under Delaware law, it's provided that no improvement requiring an occupancy permit can be constructed within 50 feet of the boundary of a preservation district. So to ensure compliance with that law, there will be a 50-foot agricultural preservation buffer between the boundary of the property and Mr. Vincent's land and any lot lines within the development. Now the 20-foot landscape buffer will be within that 50-foot ag preservation buffer. As required by Delaware law, deeds to any lots will include the notice restriction that discloses that an agricultural preservation district is located in the vicinity. And that law also protects the adjacent landowner in an agricultural preservation district from complaints of nuisance related to normal agricultural uses and activities. That's under Delaware statute. The remaining land to the east and to the south, there is an existing 12-foot wide farm access easement that currently runs approximately right through the middle of the property out to Route 1. And that easement is for the use of the farm that's located to the east or to the right of the screen, as well as the use of the site itself for access. Now, it's proposed to relocate that easement along the rear and the south boundary lines of the site, and that would provide access out to Route 1. That existing farm easement is minimal right now. It's only 12 feet wide. The new relocated easement will be increased to 30 feet in width, and that will improve the ability to use the easement. Obviously, 12 feet is pretty narrow. The two adjacent properties along where that easement would be are both in agricultural use. As I said, it's proposed to have the easement right along the property line, and then on the inside of the easement, it's proposed to have the 20-foot landscape buffer along that interior line of the easement. Deeds to all lots will include the agricultural use notice required by the Section 99.6 of the subdivision ordinance, and that language is almost identical to the Agricultural Preservation District language. It discloses that there's agricultural uses in the area. The county's ordinance also provides that no improvement requiring an occupancy permit shall be constructed within 50 feet of lands used for agriculture. And again, with the 30-foot easement and the 20-foot a landscape buffer, there's 50 feet. And as you can see, there's considerably more land there. So again, there's effectively somewhere between 50, probably to 100-foot buffer that would be provided along those property lines. The total open space on the 64.2 acres will be 25.1 acres, which is approximately 39% of the site. And as is normally done, the community will have a homeowners association, and that will be a requirement of all lot owners. The HOA will be responsible for collecting assessments, enforcing restrictions, and covenants, maintaining the development's roads, entrances, rec areas, buffers, stormwater facilities, and other common areas. I did prepare proposed conditions and findings, which I will submit for your consideration. The proposed subdivision fully complies with the comprehensive plan, the Sussex County Zoning Ordinance, and the subdivision ordinance. As I said, there's quite a history to this piece of property. I understand that some people would like to see land remain as farmland, and I understand the reasons for that. But the owner of this farm would like to see it sold for residential development. And he has his rights too. So for the reasons we stated, basically we're seeking approval of that, and that basically sums up my presentation other than any questions you have.
All right, sir, we thank you, Mr. Fuquay. We'll see if anyone on the commission has any questions for you. And we'll start with Ms. Wingate.
I'm just reading through some of the proposed conditions. I think you answered most of what my questions were. I had questions about DLDOT improvements on Cave Neck and Route 1, and I'm assuming because of the limited amount of traffic that the sequence is going to dictate that happening first.
Yeah,
most likely.
The letter we have from DLDOT says that that's the condition of approving anything over 200 vehicle trips per day, and as I said, that's a very minimal number of trips.
Yeah, that was...
And the applicant fully understands those requirements, and I said is pursuing doing that, which will result in not only his ability to build the subdivision, but improvements for the general public. If the sooner this is built, the better for traffic.
I have no further questions.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hopkins?
So, Mr. Fuquay, on the 200 trips, is that like round trips in and out? Is that what they...
I think they call it trip ends, which... I don't know whether they're round trip or not, to be honest with you, but it's not very many trips. I think like an average house might have 8 or 9 trips per day, so you know might equate to about 10 houses, I would think. 20 houses.
So are you saying that that you can only build 20 and how or some whatever that formula is,
could only build 20 houses until the grade separated interchange is constructed, and we can wait for DLDOT to do it, or we can enter into an agreement with DLDOT to get it built.
That's That's a stretch.
It's a big chunk to bite off, and but that's the applicant has chosen to do that.
Okay.
And just to go along with that, there's also, you know, Mr. Hopkins and members of the commission, there's a time constraint to that, you know, from final site plan. They've got 5 years to get substantial underway. So it's not like, you know, dealt out or the applicants can kind of sit around for 6 years. You know, they're going to have to.
Yeah. Realistically, yeah. The again, as Vince just said, once you get final site plan approval, it's good for 5 years. This is intended to move along. Yeah. I mean, it's planning to get this designed in the end of this year, beginning of next year, and actually start construction and have it built by, well, within 2 or 3 years anyway.
Yeah. So you're by faith expecting to work this the grade separated road construction out.
Yeah, Mr. Brockenbauer from DelDOT said, here's your options. Here's the ways that we can get this done. Again, like I said, we need it. The county wants it. The public needs it. It's something that's a benefit to everybody.
Well, we definitely, I appreciate any encouragement that we can do to help the state see a way to do something at that intersection, because it's tremendously needed.
Yeah, like I said, the state has long recognized it, and the county has pointed it out as something that needs to be done. So, you know, it's one of those things where, and I'm not the businessman, but when you put it all together, it works out that it still works business-wise, and
that's great.
So be it.
So, and then you were explaining the right of way or the way that
the farm easement.
Yeah, the Hudson property. That's going to be a 30-foot. Right away now.
Yeah, it'll be relocated and increased from 12 feet wide to 30 feet wide.
I don't think I have any other questions.
All right, sir. Thank you. Mr. Hudson.
I just have one question. Is that supposed to be done before the houses start to be built? Or is that going to be, do they do it at the same time?
The road, the interchange?
The road, yes.
And it'll be built at the same time, but again, there's okay. That'll be up to DelDOT how much they're going to release. You know, I assume DelDOT, as construction proceeds on that and it's getting done, DelDOT may lighten up on the number of vehicle trips, but that'll be purely up to DelDOT.
Because I'm thinking that if the developer pays for this, all that has to be built, all that money is spent before you can start building the first house. That's what I wanted to know. Because that's a lot of money.
Well, and that's what has to be worked out with DelDOT on this public-private partnership.
Okay.
20 houses. Like they could theoretically put the potentially even phase in. And they could build 20 houses. Right.
Yeah, as you well know, all we can do is what DelDOT says we can do. I mean, it's totally a DelDOT decision. And we understand the worst scenario is we're only going to get 200 vehicle trips until that interchange is built.
That's my concern. That's
the worst scenario.
That's my concern, is because that's a lot of money to be putting out.
But again, as I said, from a business plan, if you move forward immediately and get it done, the numbers work. So.
Okay, good. Okay, thank you. I have no other questions.
Does one get you had another question?
I do have another question. Yes, okay. Thank you, sir. Is part of the intention of the farm access road, is that then also going to be used as a construction entrance? Is that part of the intention?
I hadn't really given it any thought. But, no. No, I'm being told no. Would make sense, wouldn't it?
It does. Keep it off the highway. Yeah. Cave neck.
So if you put in about 20 ounces, and the road, the grade separated road exchange is not constructed, how does that work out with the whole clubhouse? And typically, what are your expectations? How many buildings?
Well, again, what I'm asking is that the recreational amenities wouldn't need to be built until the 70th certificate of occupancy. So it all would have been worked out by then. If we ever get to a 70th certificate of occupancy, then the interchange is already basically constructed and operational.
So something like that would be qualified, I guess, when the folks are buying the initial houses that, you know, that we're
oh yeah, I mean,
we're starting to build the 20, but
For full disclosure, as well as self-protection, everything would be disclosed, you know, as far as what's happening. And again, the applicant would be the developer. There'd be a builder that would come in that would actually be doing the construction and things, and they're all parts of the agreements that would be completed between the parties.
We are fortunate this evening to have a DLDOT representative here, and if the commission would like, we could invite that person to the podium to confirm what Mr. Fuquay is saying or answer any questions. I think the public might appreciate that as well. So if you could please come up, and you'll have to state your name for the record.
Good evening. Jennifer Sinelli Miller for DLDOT Planning.
Hi. How are you doing?
Hi. Good. Thank you.
Wondering if you might want to just elaborate a bit on the situation with the separated grade and what some of that timing might look like.
Sure. We actually do have a recent update. Per the CTP, it has gone into our project development for the southern part of the state to be developed. Construction, though, funding doesn't start till 2024. The gentleman did state correctly they have submitted a P3 application with DLDOT. They do need to reach out to DLDOT Planning to schedule a meeting to discuss some of the details, but that would advance the project much more quickly than waiting on DLDOT to do it alone.
Okay.
So that bumps it up from the 2024 date, is what you're saying, if there's a
potentially it could make it, yes, go much faster.
What's a P3? Does that mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. So that is a public-private partnership.
Okay.
So it has state and private money together.
Okay.
So what would be an average or typical, if there is such, shared value?
Kind of a new process. I'm not real clear on the time frame. I just know that they said that it would go much more quickly through the P3 process than just following the normal. Of course, it would still have to come into compliance with all of the federal and state regulations.
What are those separations cost?
Yeah,
typically.
I'm not sure. I'm sorry. I don't know what the overall cost would be.
Is there a budget for that?
If I could add, sure. From the estimates we had, it would be approximately $14 million.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Given the location and the other development that's in that area, I know there's DLDOT contributions that developers have to work towards. Are there funds available that would be made available or that have been designated from other developments that have happened along Cave Neck?
For this specific project, not to my knowledge, because again, this just came in FY19, which we just started July 1.
So, like from Painter's Mill and those developments on Cave Neck Road, do you know if there's any funds that were contributed as part of those?
There probably would have been. I mean, I can find out all the logistics of it. I would guess they were specifically on Cave Neck Road, not necessarily out to Route 1.
I had that question in mind, but is the P3, is that, are these the only public or private people involved in it, or are there other communities off Cave Neck?
That's another question I'm not sure about. I'm sorry, I will have to ask that question. Again, Drew Boyce is who provided me with the information. He's awaiting the phone call kind of to get a meeting set up with the group so because he knows that the other parcel's coming, or the other part of the parcel's coming down as well. So
We did submit a letter, I think it's June 28th, requesting to get this meeting set up, but of course this time of year is always difficult to get anything done.
Right. Okay.
I don't think anyone's going to be coming forward who's going to want to join this partnership. I think we're going to be the private partner.
You're the partner.
Yeah. I think we're the private.
Yeah.
Okay. And just to clarify, the 20 units is for temporary access to Route 1. So they can do the temporary access to Route 1, build the 20 units, but the GSI would have to be completed prior to any additional units being done.
What does that mean, temporary access?
So it means that the access would be closed off.
Oh, okay.
Any other questions at this point?
I don't really have a question, but I can't understand how everyone benefits from that and one person pays for it.
Well, It is a partnership. We're all going to pay for a good chunk of that $14 million.
If I could add, I can assure you. If I could add,
but not as much as these guys are.
The applicant doesn't get caught holding the whole bag here.
Yeah.
The idea is the applicant may arrange for the financing for DelDOT to get this done and built now, and then there may be a payback over a period of time. They're all the terms that would have to be negotiated out. Again, because, you know, this is a relatively small subdivision. Why would it be bearing a cost like this? Because it has really a minimal impact on a situation that's long existed and long needs to be done.
Yes.
What the developer ultimately doing is expediting it for his benefit, but also for everyone's benefit.
Anything else for Jen?
Thanks.
Thank you, but don't go too far away. We're probably going to need you again.
Okay.
Anyone else on the commission have any questions at this point? Mr. Whitehouse, anything?
No, thank you.
Ms. Buklevich?
No, thank you.
Okay. Ms. Cornwell?
Thank you.
Counselor?
Just one for Mr. Fuqua on the easement, because when we did the rezoning, we weren't getting into site plan and stuff, so, you know, everybody knew there had to be that easement to the back. Is the easement with that rear property owner, is that, just say somewhere that there has to be access, or does it say it has to be access here? In other words, does that have to be negotiated with that property owner? Is somebody going to run into a roadblock
it's
on that?
It's a meets and bounds legal description.
Really?
With
okay.
a plot.
Yeah.
Showing a 12-foot easement across the middle.
Okay.
Now, the question is,
right,
can the Servient state relocate that?
Sounds like a law school
without
question.
The consent of the dominant
state. Right, right.
And there's a mixture of law on that. And Delaware has never decided it.
Okay.
However, the restatement of property 3 does state.
Are we in 3 now?
That as long as you don't make it make it more difficult for the easement, or the use of the easement, you don't thwart the purpose of it, then it makes sense because the serving estate gets a better easement and the property owner gets to use its property. Although I will say, I don't want to get into any details about this, but there's discussions going on with the owner that probably will make perhaps the whole question moot as far as the farmers.
And the reason I asked is not to get into a legal question. I didn't want to get the county, or if the commission acts favorably on this, get somebody boxed in on something that still needs to be worked out with that easement. That's just so we knew sort of where that stood.
Well, but I understand that, but again, it is a private matter.
Yeah.
You know, it's really between the properties as far as that easement, and it will be worked out. I can pretty much guarantee that.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
All right, then. Thank you. All right, then. Let's see what the public has to say. Hopefully there's someone here with an interest in your application. I suspect there might be one or two. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2018-10 over Brook Meadows? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision? You know which one I'm talking about. Okay, yes, sir, you, right up front. You're first.
My name is John Vincent. I own the farm directly north of the development that's on the agricultural preservation easement.
Okay.
My background is chemistry and biology. I build desalinization and wastewater plants on cruise ships and around the world for public utilities. I hold one U.S. patent on a wastewater system. If we could go back to the slide, I don't have a slide to present to you, that slide. Some of the things that we went over just prior to the details of Overbrook Meadows. I'd like to put a little bit different perspective on this so that everybody gets to see what we're talking about. When we talk about this development, we're going to have a homeowners association. Now, one of the things that comes up with this, if we begin to look, my southernmost chicken house, this one right here, that's 500 feet long. If you swing that around, if you actually swung it and pulled it around, we're going to be in that development. It's less than 300 feet across there. Now, when I empty out those 4 chicken houses, there's between 24 and 26 tractor trailers that go out. And they're in there almost a full day. Now, if somebody's trying to sleep over in that development. And you've got chicken hawks, which move those metal crates out, and they're banging on tractor trailers. You think they're going to get a good night's rest? Some of these issues that I'm pointing out are not that I'm criticizing the development. What I'm saying is that as planning and zoning and as a commission, we all have to live with the decisions and we have to live together. When Mr. Fuqua pointed out that Mr. Chapel had been on that land for 60-some years and he had a right to sell it, the Vincent family has been on that farm since 1848. Milton was incorporated in 1820. So it gives you a little bit of perspective. I don't know that my sons will be taking it over right away, but it will be under them. But anyhow, just as a chicken operation, if you do that to a homeowners association, somebody that moves into that area and lives along that row of houses where that woods is, that's going to be now gone, is not going to get a real comfortable night's sleep. Now, if we go to just the southernmost boundary that comes off the property and goes down towards those chicken houses, my irrigation system pivots right at the apex of the triangle, right here. It swings all the way around. Now, if I've got a northwest wind coming down and I'm running ammonia, if you've got a corn crop, you hook an ammonia system up to it. That's what those big plastic tanks are out there by the head of an irrigation system. And you inject ammonia. I had an instance where right up to the front, when you look at the lane that goes back to my farm, that was my grandmother's house, and it was sold off, and a daycare center was put in. The lady came out to me one day, and she said, can the kids that go to the daycare center here play in the drift of the irrigation system? You know, it's cool out, hot in the summer, little bit of youngins running around there, they're having a ball. How about if I inject ammonia in there and I start going to about 2 parts per million? You think about the skin on an infant child. SPF 40 doesn't protect you from ammonia. It doesn't protect your eyes. It doesn't protect your hair. It can still burn your skin. So I thought, whoa, maybe I better not put ammonia in. The next thing is I can't aerial spray on the front of the farm. So by omission, by allowing that commercial property in, I cut my throat. I can't put in peas, lima beans, or sweet corn, because that all involves aerial spraying. Now, I might could on the back of the farm, but if we put this development in, I don't think I'm even going to be able to make the back of the farm, because when Alan Corman comes up and turns in that airplane, I don't think he can get her turned around in 500 feet over top of my chicken houses and get her going back. He's going to make a loop over that. So all of a sudden, I can't grow any row crops. That irrigation system that I put in was $250,000. Mm-hmm. Now, that probably doesn't mean too much to some of y'all around here, but it was a pretty good number to me. But I put that in that's not paid off, and if I start cutting out the amount of crops I can grow, boy, all of a sudden I'm cutting my throat. Now, if we've got a homeowners association here, which we said we were going to have, if you look where they're going to put the road in for the access to the farm immediately to the east, to the back of it, they said, well, we're going to expand that right of way up to 30 feet instead of 12 feet. How about if Mr. Hopkins wants to sell that for development? Can he sell it for development? Mr. Robson, can he sell it for development?
A lot of that depends on the fact that he already has a 12-foot easement. He may not have been able to do it already because he doesn't.
What do you have to get a development?
It's usually 50 feet. Yeah.
It's 50 feet.
Yeah.
Is he going to be able to get it and buy it from the homeowners association?
He doesn't have it right now, it sounds like.
He doesn't have it right
who's
now.
Who's questioning who? I mean, he can testify.
I mean, I just don't see where that's relevant to this situation.
Well, it's relevant because all of a sudden when you were talking about boxing somebody in, he is boxed in. And if something happens, he and his wife and their daughter wants to sell that and sell it for the highest and best use, he can't. He couldn't buy it at that time.
Excuse me, Mr. Vincent, are you speaking on behalf of Mr. Hopkins?
No, I'm just saying that I'm speaking on my behalf because I have a parcel that is boxed in by homeowners association, and I can't use it.
I appreciate that, but if you have not been authorized by him to speak on his behalf, I'm going to ask you to confine your comments to your property and this one, if you would, please, okay?
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Coming back to this, when we talk about the nitrogen and phosphate loading that's coming in, and we're going to reduce this by X amount, we're also going to increase the amount of aromatic and aliphatic hydrocarbons, benzene, ethylene, glycols, anything that can run off a driveway. Mm-hmm. We say we had about 28% of impervious area, 28% of the acreage, was that right?
Sure, you need to stay focused up here if you would.
28% of the acreage is going to be impervious area?
I believe that was right.
If you get a 4-inch rain on 28% of it, and there's 28% is what, 30 acres? Is that roughly right out of a 114-acre parcel, roughly, just give or take?
Okay.
If we have that much area, do you know how much rainwater we'd have if you had a 4-inch rain? We have to have the retainage for 950,000 gallons of water. Now, if we let that go out, and we let that go down the drainage in between the farms. If you look at the southern map, there is no stream in there. So you've got an outflow of 659 gallons a minute that's going to infiltrate through and go out on that marsh, cut a little ditch right straight through, go to Red Mill Creek, then it's going to turn, go about a quarter of a mile, and go down to Roosevelt Inlet and make a big alluvial fan. So consequently, you've got a lot of runoff that's going to be happening there. The overall impact of this aromatic and aliphatic hydrocarbon, when we had the DLDOT representative here in the two hearings before this, I asked for any analytical work that they had done for road runoff. Because in my experience, one of the things I saw was that when I went away to Vietnam and came back after 3 years, all the American eels that were in the drainage on the northern side of my property were gone. While I was away, they opened up the second half of the dual highway. They increased that surface area, and that runoff that I get on the northern side of my farm comes from almost at the edge of Route 88 all the way down to where it gets just about to Weiss Chapel Church, and then comes and dumps out through my front field. Goes down through the woods and goes out. Since all of that runoff has taken place, no more eels come up in there. And it's not getting any better. There's a lot of that area in that branch that now doesn't even grow vegetation. It's just turned into like a muck, and a lot of trees are turning over. The other day, local resident came to me by the name of Bud Ritter. Bud Ritter's been tilling the farm to the north and to the east of me. It's called the Fisher Farm. It was established back in the 1700s. He asked me why water is coming up on his property now. Why is water continually approaching and encroaching on his tillable fields? What's going on there? Well, Broadkill Creek, if you begin to look at the development that has occurred around the area, every little tributary that flows into Broadkill Creek, all around Milton, all around Georgetown, you know, even off Route 9. Off Route 9 are almost at Steiner Road. The Army Corps of Engineers calls that drainage a feed to Broadkill Creek. But what has happened is the impact on that creek has filled up the bottom and filled it up with sludge. Now, you've got the town of Milton with an antiquated sewage plant. It's an old RBC system. General Dynamics doesn't even make them anymore. And you've got every type of outfall all around the mill ponds there in Milton where they're not hooked onto sewers. And you've got sulfonated alkaloids. People say, well, what's a sulfonated alkaloid? It's what we use to get rid of phosphated detergents. When we got rid of them and started with sulfonated alkaloids, we started feeding a bacteria called Vegetoa. sometimes you can go around the marsh, or if you're driving to back to Broadkill Beach, or maybe even going over to Lewis and you cross the canal, you say, man, something is dead around here. It smells bad. You smell that rotten egg smell. That bacteria takes that sulfite and sulfate radical, pulls the oxygen off of it, and liberates H2S. That's the rotten egg smell that you smell. And when you go out on the salt marshes, all the CC ditches that are out there are just coated in the bottom with it. But anyhow, coming back to the creek, we used to have a surveyor here by the name of Charlie Murphy. Charlie did a lot of surveying Sussex County, knew a lot of the history of Sussex County. He came to me some time ago because I had a piece of marsh surveyed out there, and he said, John, I got bad news for you. I said, what's the bad news? He said, 10 feet of your land is gone. I said, well, where'd it go? He said, well, all I can tell you is the creek is getting wider and it's getting shallower, and there's a whole lot more solids being washed into it. Well, sure enough, there it is on the survey. What used to be there and what's now gone. Of course, you've got wake action by boats and all this kind of stuff. But all these tributaries that are flowing in are bringing in more solids, more petroleum, and it's killing the life forms on that salt marsh.
So I'm going to ask you to bring this back around to this application and tell us what this application
is. In this drainage on this runoff, okay, You're not going to be helping those solids one little bit when they go out on the marsh. Right. That's going to be washing out there, and it's going to create an alluvial fan at Lewis with Roosevelt Inlet, which is there, and you can see if you fly over. You can get in a plane and see that.
Okay.
The traffic, when you're coming out with farm equipment from my place, I'm right there with that daycare center at the end of my road. Well, you've got people turning in there, and you're trying to bring out a big tractor with a 40-foot piece of equipment. When you bring that out and you add another 270 cars from 135 house development, that's not going to help the traffic flow anymore. So consequently, I have to be very cognizant, because when I come out, I have to go down to Route 88 and turn and go west to get to another one of my farms. So consequently, coming back, it's either start at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. That's about the best time to move your equipment and get it there and come back, because traffic will not get better even late at night. So it's usually 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. So the traffic situation is not good. The runoff from roads is not good. And the more development we keep putting out there and keep putting on those tributaries into the Broadkill, it's not helping anything. So as far as a nitrogen-potassium ratio, biologically you can get rid of nitrogen and potassium or phosphate. You can't get rid of aliphatic hydrocarbons. Let's see what else I had on.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up in about 60 seconds, okay?
If there is some type of mediating differences, these homeowners associations come in contact with farms, rather than leaving a farmer or a private individual stuck with the fear of lawsuits coming from noise or from dust when you're combining or from irrigation drift, maybe it would be better if they were told, this is what you're moving in the neighborhood with.
I think they are. I believe that's the right to farm language is in the deed, is it not?
We're not seeing it. I've already got a farm, and it's off of Oyster Rock Development, and there is nothing in there. As a matter of fact, I've got a 30-acre tract that is landlocked.
It might not be in your deed, but it might be in the deeds of that go with these properties.
Well, it's coming back on the private individuals. And then I have a permit with the state of Delaware to release game birds. A lot of times you don't have as good a croppage as you'd like to have, so you can release pheasants or you can release some mallard ducks or something like that. I have to give 300 feet as a consideration to this development. And what I'm asking, why can't they back it off 300 feet or split the difference? Because I lose that front field to hunting. It's not 300 feet wide. So consequently, I'm losing that, and I'm giving concession after concession to a development and getting nothing back. So is that right? Thank you for your time.
Oh, indeed. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. It was, actually, I learned quite a bit. Who's next?
Mr.
Anyone else?
Chairman, before we see if there's anybody else, too, just for clarification, you know, county code requires that agriculture use notice. There were proposed restrictive covenants that were submitted, and it has the agricultural use protection notice in them. And looking at the proposed conditions, it actually requires that. And certainly, we would incorporate that in any conditions if it was to be acted favorably as well.
I would certainly hope we would be. I mean, that's the whole purpose of that legislation, was to prevent the we can't fix everything, but the one thing that was designed to do is to protect gentlemen like this from being sued or harassed by neighbors who knowingly move into a farming area. I mean, it just makes good sense. I know that doesn't address all your concerns, but that piece of it, I think we can deal with. Is there anyone else who would like to speak in opposition? All right, then. Is there anyone on the commission that has any questions? All right, then. There being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us for the rest of the evening to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning.
Thank you.
Our next public